The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Before we get into the show, fun fact, this podcast was born out of a newsletter that we started way back in 2012. People really seem to like it, and we think you will too. It's a quick hit list of 10 things we've discovered recently that we love. Everything from recipes to beauty products to books to tools to truly anything that excites us. We send it every Monday. We do take some holidays off, and it's free. Sign up at athingor2hq.com. Here's the show. Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. To share your thoughts on this episode or anything really, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at A Thing or Two HQ.
And join our Geneva for all the questions that you want to put in our DMs. I promise you're going to be better off crowdsourcing from the crew that's in Geneva.
That's right.
Very engaged.
Very engaged.
It's like Slack, but not for work, if you don't know what
Geneva
is.
It's Slack for fun.
It's Slack for fun. Would like to start off this episode by sharing two kid things that I endorse that I think most...
I think Cam endorses both of
them,
too.
Cam endorses them, too.
He's talked to me about both of them.
I mean, because they're great. And I think a lot of parents already know about them. They're not, like, a secret. But maybe, I don't know, I needed someone else to tell me about them, so...
Well, but knowing about... Having heard about them is not the same thing as having tried them or using them. You know what I mean? Sometimes you need a bit more.
I also just... I need the media. I need David Marchese at New York Times to be interviewing the creators of these things because they are genius.
That's the pitch.
And they really work. First one is Cosmic Kids Yoga, which she is the most concise way of putting this is she's Adrian Yoga with Adrian for children.
Does she have a Benji?
Yes, she has a dog.
Perfect. Great.
And the dog shows up. So it's a series of kids yoga videos by this British woman, Jamie, who she was a classically trained actor.
Adrian was a musical theater kid. You don't say. Like,
so Jamie was doing children's party entertainment while trying to get her acting career off the ground and then started doing this. One day she was like coming down the stairs and like in full clown outfit. And her husband was like, really? Like, are we still doing this? And she was like, but I'm going to make 100 quid. And he said, I will pay you 200 quid to stay home and not do it.
So this is the sequel to that Tessa Bailey book.
Yes, exactly.
About the clown.
About the children's clown.
Yeah. This is where she goes from there. Yeah.
So we started this 2 years ago, and I was stunned by how, not even hypnotized, but like compliant Cam became immediately with the videos, like doing yoga.
And he was
on
like
his own.
Three then?
Yeah. Like maybe had just turned three or, yeah, he was young. And he's a hyper.
I also just like the word compliance being used here.
Because... Because it's a word I've been using often to describe how he is not in general as a person. He is not a compliant person. He is not a people pleaser by any means. But he will do whatever Jamie tells him to do. And
we'll take it.
Incredibly independent with it. And he can do it for a really long time. And he loves it. And it just makes my heart burst because it's such a beautiful, like worthwhile practice for him. I had been thinking a lot about his ability to focus, and he's five, so he just turned five. He's not great at it. And so turned to the idea of meditation. And it turns out that, of course, Jamie has guided meditations. They're available on Spotify, which was nice because I didn't want it to be part of like a
video
thing. Yeah, because she does incorporate guided meditation into some of her yoga videos.
But you don't need a video for meditation. That's part of the beauty of meditation.
I wanted to do it separately. And I will say that when I first said to Cam, like, I want you and I to start meditating together, he was not into it at all. And then I was like, but it's with Jamie. And he was like, okay, I'm in.
Because he's like, you, Jamie. I could take relief in this context, right. But Jamie, I'm into.
Yeah. If it had been anybody else, I think he would have been like, I'm not doing this. It's also great for me because I don't meditate barely ever. I'm that person who's like, no, meditation's really important. And then I only do it when shit has completely hit the
right.
fan.
You're like, it's just like it's like taking a fish oil pill when you're like,
when you're already incredibly sick.
Right.
Yeah. I want it to be a more regular part of my life. Doing it with him, obviously, is a great way to force it into my own routine. It's funny doing it with him because I have the impulse occasionally to correct how he's doing it, which is so antithetical to the spirit of meditation.
No, meditation's really all about just the doing it is the thing.
It's It exactly. And I will say, mindfulness and exercise were two things that proved their value to me and like that I learned about basically in my late 20s. And yeah.
And changed your life.
It completely changed my life. Yeah. And the thing that I always thought, could not stop thinking about when I was introduced to the benefits of both was, my God, what if I had learned about these as a child? What if I had understood the benefits of these two things as a child? How different
my life
would have
been. What if I knew how to turn to these things right. on a daily basis?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'd always wanted to figure out ways to introduce it to a child if I ever had one, and then to Cam. And then, of course, like, life gets busy. And also, there's no, like, I'm sure there is in New York something like this, but there's no, like, church for mindfulness, right? Where you're like,
I'm certain that there is, but you don't also don't
also
want a place
sure
to go.
Yeah. Like, no, I don't want a place to go. I also, yeah. Either way, it was like this. I was like, right, this is a way. The best way to teach him mindfulness would be to be more mindful myself and demonstrate it for him. The second best way is
for
Jamie to help both of us. Yeah. So I would say, you know, in the spirit of better done than perfect, Jamie is helping both of us be more mindful. It's great reminders for me. She's just incredibly skilled at introducing this concept to children. It's also a great bedtime thing. If he's super hyper during bedtime, we will do it before we read bedtime stories to just like get him calm.
Oh,
there's a whole Sleep Adventures album that came out last year from Jamie. But he has also like bounced down the stairs to me in the morning and been like, can we do a morning meditation? And I'm like, sure, why not?
What are these meditations like? Or how are they structured?
So the one that I really like is, or one that I think like exemplifies it, is she uses the metaphor of a pond and fish swimming in the pond. And she says, be the pond, the fish are your thoughts. You can watch them all go by. And this is like a really common sort of mindfulness metaphor. Some version of this, people will use cars or, you know, a street with cars going by or clouds in the sky or whatever. But she uses the idea of all these fish going by and one might be angry and one might be sad and one might be curious or whatever. And like, it's fine for all of them, just let them go by. But you are not the fish, you are the pond that the fish are swimming in. And be the pond is the name of this guided meditation. There's another one about a dragon who gets really riled up and discovers this breathing meditation. And like, let me tell you, I've been trying to get Cam to do deep breathing his entire life. And like, it doesn't really work when a kid is having a tantrum and you're like, take a deep breath. But if you're being like the dragon, it's Delilah the dragon. And, you know, she's learning how not to burn the place down every time she gets upset. You know, they need to want to be like the characters, not be doing what their parents are telling them to do.
This is so good.
It's great. She's really, really good at adapting these things into sort of children's stories that enchant them. And even like, you know, at some point she introduces counting backwards from 10, which again, when I have said this, it doesn't go very far, but there's something about Jamie saying it that he's like, okay, have to. And sometimes he'll be like, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know, but like, he's still doing it.
He's still doing
it. Still, he will do it. The other thing, and equally like mind blown, imagine if I had had this as a child, is this show called Number Blocks.
He told me about Number Blocks on a FaceTime recently, and the context was, he goes, did you have Number Blocks when you were a kid? Which is his like new thing. Did you have this when you were a kid? At least to me.
Yeah, no, he does it mostly with you. He does it with us too. Like, did you like, were you a fan of, you know, as a kid?
Oh, because he got into it with you about Miffy.
Oh, yeah. He was like, because you liked Miffy as a kid. And I was like, I didn't have Miffy as a kid. And
Yeah. Did you have Number Blocks when you were a kid? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, Number Blocks, I saw it, like, whatever.
Yeah. So I was FaceTiming with a friend from high school who has a son younger than Cam. And the son popped up on the screen and starts reciting all of these mathematical equations. And I was like, Kyle, what the fuck is wrong with your kid? Why does he know all this? And he was like, it's Number Blocks. So I was like, cue it up.
Let's go.
It is a British show. It's produced by this company called CBeebies. It's an educational math show. And the entire premise is that every number is a character comprised of the amount of blocks that make up that number. Every number has different personalities, and the personalities are based on the number. So one is very brave and independent. 8 has octopus-like tentacles. There's like some prime numbers that are kind of quirky and weird. And like, you know, like it's, I don't actually know what number theory is. And I don't know that this is number theory, but it all feels so much more like conceptual to me than I ever understood math to be.
Yeah. I mean, math is creative and fun, which I think is somehow not often how math is presented.
I certainly would never describe it as creative and fun. This show is very creative and fun. So just the very idea that the numbers themselves are characters is huge, because again, kids love characters. Cam loves Seven because it's rainbow colored.
Well, also it's the demonic device of it all. Yes. Like where you're like, Seven does this and I understand that because I know who Seven is as a character.
As a character. So the other thing that is really key, and again, this feels like some basis of math that I never learned, is that because these numbers are all made up of blocks and the number of blocks in each number, 4 can be a square, 4 can be a line. Some things are rectangles. Then you combine, you know, when 4 links up with 6, it's no longer either of those numbers. It's 10. And you see that see visually the way that happens. Yeah. So I think, again, this is speaking to me because I'm more of a visual person. And it has resonated with Cam so much. He loves math now. He asks questions about math all the time. It was like instantaneous. He will constantly, you know, what's 101 times 100? The first seasons are very basic. It's just truly numbers, addition, subtraction. Then they get into multiplication. And it becomes really easy to understand because the numbers are all visually interacting with each other in the way that on paper numbers interact with each other when you're 8 times 10, but you don't have that visual.
Right. That's interesting.
I'm so weirdly moved by it because I've never been great at math. I rejected it as a kid because I was intimidated by it. I still do. And so to see like the basic foundations represented in this way that is so different from how it was introduced to me, it feels obvious, but it's definitely not how it was taught to me. Yeah. I definitely learned it as memorization or these little mnemonic devices that continue to be useful in some ways. I'm totally stunned by how effective it has been for Cam, how it has made him very attracted to math as a subject. I want to read some quotes from the people who created it because I think it helps explain it. So they say all previous math program for younger children had been about a character who does math. They go on a picnic and they share things out. It's also British, so they're actually saying maths.
I'm adapting this for an
American audience.
Yeah.
So
you're translating it.
And who knows what share things out means, but they go on a picnic and they share things out. They go fishing and they count the number of fish they caught. So the maths have been an add-in, but with number blocks, the characters are the maths. And then another quote is, the way I was raised and most kids our age were raised is that our first engagement with numbers were the symbols for our numbers, which is silly because the symbols don't really mean anything. The structure of math is really important, how the math works, how it fits together, the range in which it works. So for example, 4 can be a line or a square. It doesn't matter because it's still 4. So we're understanding the conservation of 4. It's not about a symbol.
The conservation of four. I love it. The symbol is interesting. Yeah.
There was also a really funny quote in the article that I didn't take down verbatim, but it was talking about how it's confusing when 2 and 3 get together and they become 5, are 2 and 3 still there? And he was like, well, it's like marriage. 2 people become 1 person, but they both kind of lose their original personalities. Now they're like a different version of themselves. It was like, yeah, I guess okay. In some way.
Yeah.
That makes sense. The other thing I would say, there's also alpha blocks, which Cam also loves. I think it's also very compelling. Perhaps because I'm someone who struggled with math, it's not as magical to me. I also think in general, there is a lot of compelling spelling, reading, writing, educational programming that seems to work.
Right. It's less lacking a category.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize going into this that you just love British children's programming.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Wow. Both of these come out of the UK.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Our British imports.
Yeah.
Well, and I was never a Teletubbies person.
I was.
Yeah.
I was a hardcore Teletubbies person, like in high school.
Right,
so
that's
far
too late. Right. That's when it happened.
Just for context.
Yeah, no, it's true. I guess as a child, I really didn't consume any. It was Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, we didn't really get a lot.
Yeah.
One of the times I felt most seen and loved for like who I was when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. My grandpa had like stayed with us for a few weeks that summer, and I just like loved Teletubbies and was so charmed and enamored of them, and like Poe especially. And
which one's that?
The little red one.
Okay.
Who's like Poe?
Yeah.
Like
so
a
you
real
would watch
wispy.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I also had a friend in who like lived in Leeds, and we were pen pals, and she would send send things back and forth. And that Christmas, my grandpa got me a box set of stuffed Teletubbies.
That's
and it
really
was just
cute.
So sweet and charming and like the least judgmental like thing you could get.
That's very charming.
For like I was probably 16.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Indeed for sponsoring today's episode. I think that having a direct report leave a job is sort of the like work equivalent of having to deal with a move where you're like, oh my God, not only do I have to pick up the pieces of this person leaving, but then I have to train a new person and get into that whole thing. And in between, I have to do the whole job hunt, which is sort of the like moving equivalent is the apartment search, which is just like so tiring, so exhausting. And you really do often just feel like you are pounding the pavement, which like, it's just, it doesn't need to be that way. It just really doesn't need to be that way. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed, if you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of our show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/a thing or two. Just go to Indeed.com/a thing or two right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/a thing or two. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Barely Filtered, hosted by me, Aurora Culpo, where my mess is my message and I'm here to share it all with you. Let's optimize our lives together and I'll make the mistakes so you don't have to. Join me as I share TMI personal stories about navigating relationships, dating, and mental health, all while breaking stigmas around topics like ADHD, anxiety, and depression. From messy mistakes to moments of growth, I'm here to support you on your journey towards healing and self-discovery. Tune in every Wednesday for a mix of humor, vulnerability, and raw honesty as I explore the ups and downs of living in this meat suit. Follow Barely Filtered wherever you listen to podcasts.
We have a lot of small thingies updates.
We have some thoughts, questions, feelings, inquiries on the back of some thingy submissions. We've had a lot of like interesting thingy submissions that we need to talk about.
I think we're going to end up having to do updates on all of these because I think hopefully we'll invite some more.
We want your thoughts.
Yeah.
Leave us voicemails. Send us DMs. Send us emails because we need to understand some of these things a little bit more than we do right now.
Something that happens in thingies, we've talked about it before. Also, people ask me all the time how it happens and the answer is I don't know, is that we will often get submissions on the same, like many submissions on the same topic in a single week. It's something so random.
For example, most recently, granola.
Yes. Which did, I think, eventually become a competition. Like it became like at first we got 3 or 4 submissions all at the same time before we had even posted them. And then it became being like,
no,
everybody
this
was piling
one.
On.
This yes. granola. It's this granola.
I mean, granola sure is always happening. It really feels like according, you know, based on thingies that it's really happening right now.
But I think the question of like the why now, it is interesting to me. And like, honestly, what I've got for you is limited.
Yeah.
Global Newswire published a piece, published a release, granola market to reach $11.9 billion US dollars in 2032, driven by preferences and wide range of options available online and offline. That headline gets very little, right?
Yeah.
Except, but what we need to know is that this is an increase from $8.9 billion in 2022. Basically, the granola market is poised to have like a 30% increase or something over the next 10 years.
That's a big increase.
It's a big increase.
Especially for something that's been around forever.
And it
has always been a thing.
And that, no offense to everybody who's been submitting things, I don't feel like we're innovating in a like that much. Like it's
absolutely
still granola.
Not. It's absolutely not.
So this piece does not shed that much light. My two best takes are like what I can posit here. Mm-hmm. It's easy to make diet-specific versions of this thing.
Yes.
And like to make a vegan or to make a gluten-free or like whatever.
Or
it's
grainless.
Easier, right. It's easier to make dietary-specific versions of this than it is to make dietary-specific versions of like most other things that fit in these categories.
Yes.
Because it often is just like the dry ingredients glued together by something sticky.
Yep.
Like we're not, it doesn't have to rise.
Right.
It doesn't have to
true.
Reach a specific consistency, whatever, whatever. In the same way, it is easy to tweak these products to like suit our shifting tastes.
Yes.
And to be like chai, cranberry, granola, like spicy za'atar apricot granola.
We can all be our own unique snowflake granola.
Yeah. And like we can be like, oh, here's what people are like into right now. And we can give them that thing.
We can adapt it to the buzzy. Yeah.
We can make sure that we're like giving people the buzzy ingredient that they want that they have like recently discovered, like sumac, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And despite the fact that we had so many people respond to sort of defend their favorite brand of granola, the overwhelming majority of responses when we asked people what's happening with granola, why are you all so obsessed with it? Everybody was like, you got to make your own. Everybody says you got to make your own.
I mean, my hot take is I just don't really like granola. Mm. Except for this like one recipe that my mom used to make in bulk that was from a 2002 issue of Bon Appetit called vanilla scented granola.
Mm.
The language is so specific because vanilla scented, it had vanilla in it. It was vanilla flavored too, but like scented just feel it. Yes. Like what a 2002 framing. I think the magic is that it had hardly any cinnamon in it, which like all
you
of
don't like cinnamon.
I don't like cinnamon, and almost every granola tastes like cinnamon, even when it's chai latte granola.
Yeah.
I really do not get the granola hype. I feel like every time you and I go to LA together, mm-hmm. I try it again. Like that's like,
I like that it's in LA as if like it's not everywhere, but it's
I don't buy it. Available to me when I'm with you because you eat granola.
Oh, right. Yes, true.
And then I'm like, I'll see. Maybe I like granola. And nope, never like it.
I like it. The one granola that I think is outstanding is this one from a company called Baker's Bounty. I have only ever been able to acquire it at the Grand Army Farmers Market on Saturdays. It's a Baker's Bounty. It's a bakery, and they have the most incredible granola. So if you find yourself there.
Okay.
I think it's cinnamony, though.
Here's the thing. I'll buy it, and then I'll try it and be like, yep, still don't like it.
I think it's cinnamony. You won't like it. But it is. It's really extraordinary. It's quite buttery, and it's quite salty as well.
I think salt is really important, and I think it is something that is not present enough to get to what you were saying about the like the sugar of it all.
Yeah.
I died at this cut headline from 2016, Americans still believe granola is good for them.
It's
perfect.
But it is perfect, and this will always be the case.
But it does benefit from the halo of this, like, of it being wholesome.
Well,
like,
so this was actually my favorite response to our question about, like, what is happening with granola and, like, how are you eating it? Somebody wrote, with yogurt, handfuls as a snack. Virtuous / wholesome plus indulgent / delicious.
Like,
you just used all the adjectives that people use to describe why they like granola.
I think that's why people like granola.
It is virtuous and indulgent at the same time.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Something that did come up in this Global News Wire piece was it's a press release, is that granola bars are like really driving the category too, because they're like a on the go thing. And you know, if you go to an airport, it's very clear the granola bars are selling.
I can't find a single one that I like these days. And not
absolutely
even just granola,
not.
Just a bar.
A bar, no.
I can't find a single bar that appeals to me these
no.
days.
No, and also the bars I used to like, the flavors I liked have been eliminated.
Yeah.
And now they're blueberry something, and I don't want that. Anyway, it seems that Bob's in general are loose granola.
Yeah, we're not really hearing from them about bars.
They're not a bar people.
They are putting granola on top of their oatmeal, which is funny because it's just oats on top of oats.
It's oats two ways. It's oats two ways.
Somebody did say, I like the redundancy, which thank you for acknowledging that this is a redundant behavior. But it's a textural thing, I suppose.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. It makes some amount of sense.
Yeah.
And I guess like the virtue signaling of the oatmeal is maybe, you know what
I mean?
Well,
but this is what's very funny to me is I feel like oatmeal now has a bad rap. I am getting
all over
my internet because it's just a starchy grain. So unless you're eating it with a protein, it's just making your sugar spike.
So you
got to put peanut butter or something in it.
In the same way that oat milk got.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But I'm hearing from multiple sources. In other words, I've been served on both my Instagram and my TikTok and gotten probably
three sources. Yeah.
But guys, just eat what you want. Whatever
eat what
makes
you want.
Feel good.
Who cares? Yeah.
Something else everyone's doing?
Dyeing their brows at home.
I've never dyed my brows, period, much less at home or with a professional.
No.
Have you?
No.
Okay.
No. I think for me, dye is daunting in general.
Yep.
And my brows, you know, they're
full.
They're full.
Yeah. No,
full.
I think that's just, I have thick hair. I have some patchiness or just places where I would like there to be more coverage.
You want more coverage. Yeah.
Which like,
do we think dyeing would work? I don't know.
I don't know, because it's like where, you know, I don't know if it would work.
Well, because basically what dyeing does is, from having read two articles about it, is that it's dyeing, it's like making your brows look fuller because it is dyeing the little tiny, like kind of translucent hairs.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That are especially on the tails of your brows.
Okay.
And especially on whatever the front of your brows is called. I don't remember the word.
I feel myself inching closer to curiosity and maybe I'm going to try it.
Yeah. So some of the questions that exist online. Mm-hmm. So someone had submitted that they dye their brows with henna, which feels like a good way to go. Then other people jumped in and saying they were using Just for Men. What other brands did people mention?
Arden.
Oh, yeah.
And then Refectacil came up twice. It's a terrible name. I think it sounds like a prescription rectal product.
Yeah,
Refectacil. But it's cute packaging. Everybody's point was like, just most people are like, just get the cheapest thing on Amazon and the box is going to last you 10 years because you use so little.
So little, yeah. Okay, so one point that is made in a Harper's Bazaar article is against maybe going for the cheapest thing in the world approach is, you know, dye close to your eyes. We got to be careful with this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, eyebrow. So basically eyebrow tints, things that are sold and marketed specifically as eyebrow tints and what someone would use if you got your eyebrows professionally tinted are vegetable-based formulas. And at-home hair dyes usually contain ammonia. And you don't really want ammonia around your eyes. So this Harper's article is like, just maybe a professional job or maybe source specifically eyebrow tints.
Yeah. Everybody's point was it's so easy. They're like, you literally just get a spoolie and drag it through your brow and you're done. And so I would be open, but I think it's a good point about getting stuff close to your eyes. And I've always wanted to try the serums that help your lashes grow or your brows grow. But I have been so scared off by all the reports of the bullshit and stuff that will fuck you up.
Yeah.
So I haven't done that. But if anybody knows about specifically lashes, my lashes are stubby. You have good lashes. I want to try a lash serum that's not going to make me go blind or change my eye color.
Ideally. If, a girl can dream.
If it can be had, I would like that.
A girl can dream.
Okay. I'm very interested in this.
Very interested.
A menstrual disc. Somebody submitted and I immediately was like, oh, this is just another name for the menstrual cup.
No, it's for like ultimate menstrual frisbee.
I am so thrilled that we're all talking about it. I'm thrilled that there's new products out there. I don't know if I'll try a menstrual disc or not, but I see the appeal.
Can you explain how it is different than the cup?
Well, one, it's shaped more like a disc than a cup, for one. The cup works with suction. And so you have to get it in right. Both of them you fold
so that
to get
it can,
in.
The same way that when you're trying to put like one of those caddies up in your shower.
Yes, you have to get the suction
get it
right.
In the same way.
Exactly. So the cup you remove, it has a little like nipple almost on the end that you use to pull it out. Both of them you fold in half and then stick in the vagina, the vaginal canal. And the disc does not work with suction. The disc goes up higher and it basically rests behind your pelvic bone. And what I heard from several sources is that people who liked the cup initially after having a child, the cup was no longer working as effectively for them. And I think that is because of the way the vaginal canal changes once you've shoved a human through it. And because you don't rely on suction for the disc, that is not an issue. Both of them have, I think, a learning curve, and it sounds like the disc has much less of a learning curve.
Interesting.
Like, it's like after one cycle, you've sort of figured it out. Both of them are a pain to empty. It sounds like the disc is worse to empty. Because somebody said, from one Bob said, only great if you're cool with going fishing in your vagina.
So basically, the issue with the disc from my trolling of the, or my like browsing of the comments, is that because it's so far up there.
Yeah, and I think there's no clean way to do it. And I don't think there's a clean way to do it with the cup really, but like in theory, if you just daintily pulled on that little nipple, you could sort of like not make a total mess of it. But
then you're also like balancing a cup of menstrual blood.
I think it's still quite messy. I have a friend who used to use a cup a lot and she had the ultimate horror story of removing it. She's in a bathroom that's like a single stall bathroom and you have to walk to the sink, probably with your pants around your ankles because, or at least in her case, that is because,
what are you doing?
You're not pulling up your pants while you're holding this cup full of blood. And somebody walked in on her boss.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's like blood everywhere, pants around the ankles. Like what is happening? Truly horrifying. I think the removal is a messy thing that like you're going to want to do at home.
Am I right that the disc can stay in for like 12 hours without, depending on flow, presumably.
And I think both of them, the beauty of these, you kind of leave them in for truly as long as you want, because you're not dealing with the challenges of toxic shock syndrome. It's like how long, how much it can, both of them can hold a lot more than a tampon. So it kind of becomes an issue of how much blood are you shedding.
Can you pee with the cup or no, just the disc?
I am sure. Yes, you can pee with the cup.
Okay.
The disc, I think you can pee with a cup. I guess I'm not positive about that.
But because people were bragging about, and I rightfully fucking so, that you can pee with the disc and have sex with the disc.
Yes. Both of these people apologized for saying so. And I just want to say, please never apologize for talking to us about peeing or sex. We all do it. We're perfectly comfortable talking about both on this podcast.
Yeah.
And we would like to encourage you to do the same and to never apologize for it. Yeah. The not only can you pee with the disc in, but in for some people, or like it empties when you pee because you're bearing
down. That sounds great.
Because you bear down, I think the pelvic bone shifts, and so it automatically empties but stays in somehow. It does sound great. I do think the disc sounds very appealing. I think if I were having heavier periods at this stage of my life, I probably would try it. Yes.
For the reusable one that people really
both.
Like.
Oh, they have a reusable and a non-reusable, and or I guess disposable would be the word.
Yeah.
But yeah, for a lot of people are incredibly enthusiastic about these and say that they're a lot easier to use in the cups, that they've been life-changing. Yeah, I think that this is okay. This is the other point in favor of the disc. It can help with cramps because it sits in the vaginal fornix instead of the canal. I don't actually know what any of that means, but
vaginal fornix is new for me.
New for me too.
Okay.
Could be completely made up. I don't know.
Interesting.
I have tried the cup. I never fully got it right. I loved it in theory. It was hard to get right. And I could feel it a lot. And a lot of people who had used the cup in the past said that they would always just sort of live with being able to feel it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you can avoid that, you wanna.
Well, listen, tampons you can feel too.
Depends. Yeah, no, it's true.
Depends. Oh, I know.
You know what I wanna say? I am now on the perimenopause side of TikTok and I am loving it.
I hope that you saying this gets me on the perimenopause side of TikTok. I mean, my phone heard you for sure.
Yeah.
So I think I'm on my way.
I am really excited, one, to be learning about it, two, that I think as this happens, there will just be more attention on it in general because it will be, you know, an internet trend or discourse or whatever. Yeah. But it is all of these women and a lot of doctors talking about perimenopause, specifically as it relates to hormones and hormonal shifts and solutions, which I'm just so excited about because it seems so awful. And the point that there was a TikTok I was watching this morning, which is a point that I think we've made before, but again, is just so shocking of just how much energy is put into teaching junior high schoolers that puberty is coming and what it's going to be like for them. Like, I just cannot. I remember
from ages
so much.
8 on, they're like, this shift is coming. And you're like, I don't think so. I'm 8.
You hear so much about it. It's such a hot topic. And was even, you know, when we were kids and we weren't talking about health
anything.
Stuff as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and yet, the thing is, they just wanted to tell us not to have sex and they needed a different form to do it.
They needed a different segue. Well,
they were like,
also,
we got to start somewhere that isn't sex and make it seem like it's totally normal that we're having these conversations so that we can really be like abstinence only education.
Well, and like boys were having wet dreams and they needed to get ahead of that.
Yeah.
Boys don't experience perimenopause. And so they're like, girls, you're on your own for this totally insane hormonal shift that you're about to go through. And I think it's so exciting that now we have this forum in which all of these people are talking about it, and I hope people do more about it. And I feel like I'm getting to a place where I'm going to feel empowered to go to my doctor and be like, can you please run whatever tests? Because I think I'm experiencing some stuff. And the last time I brought it up, they were like, you're too young. And I was like, something's happening. And I feel like I'm going to be equipped
to
sort of advocate for myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Natural deodorant is back in our DMs. And you're going to have to talk about this. Yeah. But people have, the only thing that I love about this conversation, because as you know, I've now pledged my allegiance to Mitchum and I've never looked back. But I like that at least we're at a place where the premise of the conversation is that natural deodorant doesn't work on its own. And so here's the stuff you have to do to make natural deodorant work, which is a level of honesty that I think we were not prepared for 5 years ago.
I think that is right. I think now that we've gotten everybody who's going to do natural deodorant onto natural deodorant, I think we're like pretty much at 100% compliance.
Yeah.
Like if you are going to be interested, you're there.
Yeah.
Now it's like real talk. Now that we're here.
Mm-hmm. How are we going to make it work?
How are we going to make it work?
Yeah.
I love it. I really, I agree with you. I'm still on the natural deodorant train. Yeah.
No, you're interested in not getting cancer in a lot of your life decisions.
Super interested
that's
in
a,
it.
That's a
it's
topic
a core
of interest,
interest
for you. Yeah.
And like, who knows about any of this and the studies about aluminum and whatever. And there are questions about all of that, yes, and how those studies were done and how that information was spread and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the aluminum and deodorant like thing is a little bit like the granola wholesome thing for other people. Yeah. Where uh-huh. I've been convinced, yes, that this that aluminum mm-hmm. and deodorant is the problem, and I can't be like convinced otherwise.
As these things go, it's a fairly benign thing to believe. True or not. Yeah. You know?
Conspiracy or not. Yeah. So I am currently on Mega Babe, and the scent that I
like the idea of being on Mega Babe, like you're on a prescription drug.
Yeah, that's
right. Exactly right.
Yeah. The scent I like is called Soapy Pits. Mm. It's kind of a neroli scent, which okay, I would say that soapy doesn't really convey.
No, and I was imagining the Melograno scent from Santa Maria Novella, that very like sort of powdery scent.
Yes. So I originally tried it because I wanted something that was like not like I don't know. I didn't want like a scented deodorant because mm-hmm. I think all the other natural deodorants I'd been using just like didn't really go in that direction. I was like, I just want something kind of neutral.
Neroli is an incredibly strong sell for me.
I think this smells great. I can't tell if it's being discontinued. Ooh. I bought a couple extras because I'm a little worried that it is. But this is me making the pitch that Soapy Pits is the one.
They
try
just maybe need to rename it.
I think they need to. Okay. I think it's maybe like Neroli Pits. Yeah. I don't know. who can say? Who can say? I really like it in general. And I also really like the way that Katie Strino has put together a whole collection of mm-hmm. armpit products because she is fully on board with the idea that there's more to it than this.
Yes. Yeah. It's a program.
It's a program. Exactly. It is a deodorant program or it is an armpit program. Mm-hmm. So something that came up is the Mega Babe Space Bar, mm-hmm. which is a charcoal soap.
Yep.
I use this. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. I haven't told you because I thought I was going to get heat for it.
I have charcoal soap that some brand sent me hanging in my shower, and I do not use it ever. And I know it's for my pits. I'm fine with you using it. Here's the thing. I'm at this stage of my life using a different soap for my vagina than I am for the rest of my body. I'm not going to use three separate soaps.
What soap are you using for your vagina?
Some one that a friend sent me after I got a yeast infection, and she was like, I swear to God, like I haven't gotten a yeast infection since I started using this one. And I'm just not going to use three separate soaps for my body.
So basically, I use this charcoal soap whenever I shower. Initially, I was like, oh, I'll just use it my bar soap. Mm-hmm. This will just be my new soap.
Yeah.
It's really just for your armpits.
One, it doesn't really foam, right? Like
it's like a little abrasive.
Okay.
It's a little intense.
Okay.
I think you could use it on your feet or something, but
Feet's a nice idea.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't use it on private parts and things because I just think that like vaginas don't want charcoal soap.
Right.
They want whatever V Magic or
or my doctor also was just like, just water. Don't use any soap down there.
I mean, that's actually what we're supposed to be doing.
Another doctor said Cetaphil or CeraVe or whatever. Just like those. That's what you should use between your legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Related to this, people are using CeraVe acne foaming cream cleanser on their armpits. It has 4% benzoyl peroxide.
Yes.
Baylor College of Medicine follows TikTok and said PU getting rid of body odor with benzoyl peroxide and said that basically like, yes, this does work because it is a bactericidal agent, meaning it kills bacteria on the surface of the skin and on your like armpits and groin and
it's
whatever.
It's like salicylic acid too, right? Like
exactly.
Because I think someone else said that they were using like acne wipes basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like the same concept that these things are all all getting rid of bacteria.
Yeah.
It oxidizes the bacteria that live on the surface of the skin by damaging the bacteria's cell wall. And with consistent use, it can reduce body odor over time by helping to reduce the amount of bacteria present on the skin that contribute to body odor. So it's very different from deodorant, which is like masking the smell,
right,
and antiperspirant, which is blocking the sweating. Right. It is like trying to get rid of the bacteria.
Yeah.
There is like a hilarious sort of TikTok discover page titled How to Clean Armpits with CeraVe with just like tons of videos.
Because you need instructions.
If you want more. And so related to this, mm-hmm. the other deodorant that mm-hmm. I feel like pops up very regularly is Nude.
N-U-U-D.
Is that how we're saying it?
I believe so. It's Dutch. I don't understand Dutch pronunciation rules, but I think in the United States we pronounce it nude.
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 We'll ask Miffy. It's Dutch.
You tried it. Somebody in our DM swears by it.
People really swear by it. I have tried it. It is a bit of a new experience. It is a lotion, which I'm fine with.
So it's not a soap. Is it a deodorant?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is a little, I would say it has the consistency of sunscreen and like almost is packaged in the same mm-hmm. kind of way. it prevents odor by neutralizing bacteria with microsilver. So it's like kind like similar conceptually. You don't reapply it after you shower or after you like wash with soap. It stays on your skin.
For how long?
Yeah. It just like wears off like over time. And so you have to reapply it every couple of days. But like eventually you reapply it less.
Do you put deodorant on?
No, it's just its own thing. For me, it's like a little bit like trying, like the experience of trying Hair Story where like.
The like co-washing where you're like, you're not going to wash your hair. You're just going to use this.
Yeah. And it's like this could change everything.
Yeah.
But the journey is so daunting.
Yes.
And there are going to be a lot of road, like a lot of like. It's not easy.
Yes.
And maybe it'll change everything, but it might take 3 months to know.
Which, yeah. Do you want to live through that? Those 3 months?
This product like does in fact sound sort of miraculous. And the experience of using it, which it was like just weird, basically. Mm-hmm. I got scared off because people report cysts that go away.
Ooh.
But are painful because of clogged pores.
Ah.
And I think I just got to a place where I was like, you know what? Like, even if I, let's say that I never get a cyst or that this is, you know, a very like rare thing, not sure. Do I want to be clogging my like pores anyway?
No.
Like,
no.
I think I would rather not. Yeah. But I do think that this is like the menstrual disc kind of thing where it's like, maybe this is like the thing, but like the journey. Yeah.
Are you at a place in your life where you're prepared to be going on that journey?
Do you need a new hobby?
Right. No, deodorant's really going through its own puberty, I would say, or perimenopause. Hard to place it exactly, but it's evolving as a category.
I think that's right.
That's the show.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially our wonderful producer, Olivia Mead. You can follow us on Instagram @athingortwohq. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwohq.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter @athingortwohq.com. And if you love our show, you'll also want to join our Geneva. Lots of good chatter happening there.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.